Redacted Media presents, in association with Ghosthead Films, the Filmological Society. On today's episode, we continue our countdown of the BBC's 100 Greatest Comedies of All Time. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Scholes, Chad Halverson, and Candace Osler.
Welcome to another podisode of the Filmological Society, where we are doing the review show, the list show, where we are counting down the top 100 comedies of all time, as determined by the BBC. So that's important. I am one of your hosts. I'm Chris Scholes. With me, as always, is Candace Osler. Hello, Candace. How are you today?
That's my name. I'm going to apologize in advance because there's a podcast going on in the studio down the hall, so you might hear a little runoff.
Competing podcast.
Yes, currently.
In Studio 2.
Another podcast going on.
You're in Studio 1.
I'm Studio 1. Studio one. I have the better lighting.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
Better lighting and better drinks.
Yes. Always important. That other voice, of course, is Chad Halverson. How are you doing, Chad?
I'm here.
Good.
That's all I can say.
Well, that's all we ask of you, Chad.
Showing up.
And watch the movie.
Survive and pull through all the obstacles that life throws at you. That's all we want for you, Chad.
Yeah, that too. All those things.
Maintain my emotional health because I care. We care about you. So if you don't if you don't take on those obstacles and kick their asses, we're going to suffer. So don't make us suffer, Chad.
Yeah, don't make us suffer, Chad.
Okay.
Thanks, Chad.
This has been today's podcast, Pep Talk. Pep Talk with Candy.
Nice. Hey, that's a sponsor for a future show.
Yeah, sponsored by Red Bull and Jack Daniels.
So today's movie, we go back to 1980. The Blues Brothers, directed by John Landis, written and directed by John Landis, written by John Landis and Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd wrote a 350-page script, and John Landis was like, no.
We'll just take this middle part, and we're good.
You couldn't tell he said no, because this film still feels like they filmed all 350 pages.
It's definitely and that was the thing when it's been a while since I watched it, and I was like, wow, 2 hours and 12 minutes. Holy shit, I forgot.
And apparently they could have made a 20-hour film, so we got off lucky, apparently.
I watched the unrated version. That was fun. And I realized two things watching that. It's about 15 minutes longer. Just has a couple extra scenes in there. But
that entire tour through Chicago, perhaps?
Yeah.
That second pileup.
You got to see north side to south side to west side. You saw everything.
That's where Bruce Wayne saved that other guy who was going to turn him in.
I realized that I don't believe I've ever seen a non-edited version, like TV edited version of this film.
Yeah.
Oh, really? You've only seen it on TV?
I think I've only seen it on TV.
What did they get
a lot
down
more
to?
Swearing.
Time-wise.
Than I remember. And it's great. I'm glad I watched it. And the other thing is, too, that the unrated version doesn't add really anything. Nothing of substance.
Nothing of substance, at least. Just more.
No more.
More amusing scenes and entertainment. Watching Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi.
Just a couple
Belushi
extra scenes.
I think
there's a couple extended scenes. There's one scene where Dan Aykroyd quits his job. Stuff like that. You know.
Whatever factory that was, which was so random and hilarious. I loved how.
Film anyway, is number 53 on the list. By the way. 53, so it's pretty big. So, is this the first Saturday Night Live spinoff that happened? It's one of the first, at least, that I'm aware of. It has to be one of the first ones.
It has to be. Because 76 was the first year of Saturday Night Live.
Other one, and
I can't imagine. What other
created in Saturday Night Live, and the band is the Saturday Night Live band that was there, minus Paul Schaefer. And so, yeah, I mean, it was the only thing that, like, separates this from, like, every other Saturday Night Live spinoff film is that Lorne Michaels had nothing to do with this. Because he produces all the other ones, so. All right, so, Chad, you said this is the first time you've seen it in a while. Let me just ask you, right? Did it hold up for you?
This movie always holds up for me. I mean, even if it was a bad comedy, which I don't think it is, the music and the musicians that they have, like, actually playing, not themselves, but a version of themselves, always holds up. Mm-hmm. Like, it's definitely, it's a musical, you know? And I always dig musicals.
And Candace, this first time seeing this film?
Yep,
what did you think?
Well, you know, I'm feeling torn because I did establish that I'd potentially be the voice of disdain and unenjoyment, and you know, I had a problem with this film. I laughed too many times, and mm-hmm. I don't know how I feel about that. Sitting and watching Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi play these characters was entertaining in ways I wasn't prepared for.
Your head was bobbing a little bit too much to the music, and
yeah, bothered. Got a little bit of headache, little neck pain going.
Yeah,
but what I personally love is when I'm watching these films, you can really tell how much I've enjoyed them by how my sketches come out, and this is an element that I really enjoyed, is that I felt so much inspiration watching the film, because I was watching this cast, stellar cast, by the way, John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, Aretha frickin' Franklin, like, oh my gosh,
Cab Calloway,
just summoning up.
Yeah, we'll talk about
Ray Charles, we'll talk about James
a
Brown.
Lot of those coming up, because I think we can't not talk about the music in this film separately. But yeah, what a cast.
Yeah, and I appreciate the stage. Like, it does feel like a stage play. And Chad, I also enjoy watching them. So feeling that and being able to pick it up and sense it, detect it, and be okay with it in the film. Because not all films can maintain your attention if you're not into musicals or stage plays like that. But this one, despite its length, persevered.
So we do have... So let's talk a little bit about John Belushi, the funnier of the two Belushi brothers. No, it wasn't Jim Belushi.
Oh, it wasn't Jim Belushi?
He watched the wrong Blues Brothers movie. Yeah, it's not John Goodman either.
Damn it.
That's wrong. Yeah, we'll talk about John Candy. How did we forget him when we were talking about the cast? There's a lot of good people.
Because there's a lot of people in this movie.
Yeah.
Carrie Fisher.
Twiggy? Twiggy. Yeah, so John Belushi, he died at age 33 in 1982, so 2 years after this film came out. The presence that he has and the inspiration that he's had for how many other characters and actors, not only SNL, because you look at like Chris Farley and a lot of those comedians in there that always looked at John Belushi as being an inspiration, but just that kind of that silent, you know, the stoicism of this role for him. Which I'm looking forward to when we look at Animal House, which is another film that's on this list that's coming up, because he's a very different character in that film.
Oh, I have yet to see that film, but from what I've seen, he looks like the complete opposite.
What are your thoughts, Candace, on John Belushi? Is this the first John Belushi film that you've seen? Do you have a lot of experience with him or seeing the old Saturday Night Live skits or anything like that?
Well, you know, I want to say I've seen Animal House. It's just I don't have a very big love for a lot of those films. Although I have appreciation because I'm aware of them, I haven't taken my own time to watch them and develop that connection on my own. I am aware of John Belushi. I don't have, again, a connection with him because I haven't experienced too many of his films or too much of him on screen to begin with. But this was interesting. He comes out. He does have like that silent Bob aesthetic to him, to where he seems shy but very confident in what he's doing. Bit of an asshole. I mean, the Blues Brothers are assholes to begin with. They're not good guys. They do whatever they want. They don't care about the man. If they want to do something, they do it. And they make fun of people around them who sort of follow social norms and social standards, which is what you can see when they go to try to recruit their first band member after the whole like amazing James Brown sermon. The scene in the church where everyone's just rocking around.
I see the light.
I know. Just John.
Jesus, tap dancing
John
Christ.
John Belushi and just being so taken by everything going on around him. Yeah. I thought that was endearing. That was one of my highlights. That, watching him eat, like, Dan Aykroyd toss shrimp into his mouth at the restaurant when they're trying to get that guy. It was a treat. I have torn feelings because there's that film appreciation element of my personality and what I like, but then there's also the don't care for a lot of the sexism that goes on in this film. I understand the world is made up of a lot of different kinds of people and a lot of different kinds of interactions. It doesn't mean you have to capture every positive interaction on screen or every positive joke, and that's largely why I don't tend to come down hard on a lot of the films that we watch. Yeah. I will have moments when I'm watching them where I think that was insensitive or annoying because this is portraying women in a certain light and I absolutely don't relate to it. And so sometimes that causes me a little disdain, gets me a little defensive.
If I can piggyback off of that, like, I will say, it's been a while since I've watched it, but they set up Carrie Fisher's character as this, you know, woman scorn on revenge, and she's going to get her target, and then she completely melts down when Jake takes his glasses off.
The puppy dog
kisses her. And I'm like, aw, that's...
It was cute.
Kind of
lame.
And
it was endearing.
It was cute.
And then he turns it on her, and it's like, well, fuck.
Yep.
Yeah. And then he just leaves her again. Like,
because it, I understand that can happen. It's funny. It's a joke. Yes. But the whole damsel and falling, like, she's smart and she was very much, yes, it was overcompensating with the rocket launcher. It was hilarious because it went with the tone of the film because they are ridiculous characters and this is what they're giving us. And I get it. And I'm appreciative of it because I'm in on the joke. And that's another thing with these films is you can't appreciate them unless you're in on the joke. You have to have a certain level of cleverness to be able to enjoy it, I believe.
I think I agree.
And another thing I noticed with this, and I don't know how it didn't click, but like the reason why this movie is so over the top and you can have hundreds of cop cars collide with each other and nobody die, or a car chase scene in a mall where nobody gets injured, or a shootout, like the reason why this universe exists is because from the beginning they were on a mission from God, and God was not only protecting them but everyone else in all the chaos. And I'm not a religious person, but in the context of this movie, like, it finally clicked. I'm like, oh man, they're saying, like, all this craziness is happening because they have God on their side. And once they were done with their mission, they got what was coming to them.
Yeah. And that's our podcast. Thank you, everybody, for No, the other scene, the other character, so Aretha Franklin's character, so she's kind of playing stereotypical woman role, right? Well, she's kind of, she's standing up for herself.
I don't think she was. I
kinda,
think she was standing up for herself.
I don't know. I kind of saw it as, you know, she's preventing, she's no, you're not doing that. No, you're not doing that kind of role. The naggy wife, which is.
Yeah. And her,
yeah, it was great.
Her performance.
And the song, is so good.
It was decent. That scene in general felt very stagey. That was one of the scenes that really did hone it in because, let's see, her husband,
Murphy.
What was his name? Matt Murphy? Yeah.
Matt Murphy,
And I appreciated this because he felt like he was just there to push the scene along, but the scene was for her because she was the star of that. I didn't like that they angled that interaction to make it seem like she was the bad guy.
Yep.
Because after her whole, like, freedom, that number...
You better
I was really, I was with it. I was like, yeah, girl, you tell him. But then it ends, and he grabs his stuff and goes with the guys, and it makes it seem like she was keeping him. And all I could think is, man, you know, they could have planned to go for a walk in the park or go adopt a pound puppy, and then Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi stroll up in there, order some dry toast and four whole chickens and a Coke, and steal her man away just because they're on a mission from God to put the band back together, which doesn't end up working out in the end. She's not the bad guy in that scene.
They are jerks. I do appreciate it. I think that scene is a good one with Matt Miller. I mean, these are actual musicians that are trying to act. None of them signed up to be actors.
Yeah.
They're just in this film. So I thought what was done really well is you know, they're really limited on what they do. And they're only given things that they can be successful at. Right? Because even that Matt Miller, there's parts of it where you're looking at him. He's talking to Aretha Franklin, and he's about to crack. Like his
Matt
lips
Murphy?
Are going up. He's kind of
crouched. Oh, wait. No, that's his character.
Yeah, he's a very strong-looking man. And, like, he's, like, hunched over. And I thought, like... The blocking they did
but
with the
I
way
think
he
that was
looked
kind of
sucked.
Maybe he was doing that just to... I that's how I always thought of it. Like he's trying to do things so he doesn't crack in that role. And you know, using the blocking and using, like, the forward shoulders and stuff like that to kind of throw him off maybe helped. And because it's so short, it doesn't become an issue.
Shit, in that scene, I would have just been like, you know, I'll take both of you. Give me Aretha Franklin and Matt
Murphy. Right, the guys should have come in, seen Aretha giving her all, and been like, actually, you want to come with us? Sorry, Matt, we're gonna go with... Cause
someone has to, someone
you'll
somebody
understand.
Has to watch
exactly.
You the soul food restaurant, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and she has a very good head on her shoulders, clearly, as we've seen, so let's go with her.
So while we're talking, so we'll talk about a little bit Aretha Franklin, but we do have James Brown and Chaka Khan in the church scene.
Chaka Khan.
Can I just, this is another thing I noticed just rewatching this as a former Catholic. I love how, you know, the whole setup is the film is their old orphanage,
taxes.
Catholic orphanage,
which,
is being shut down
Catholic
unless they
orphanage
pay
wouldn't have to pay
$5,000.
But anyway, that's besides the point.
Exactly. But I love how Cab Calloway's character, he's like, hey, you guys need to get back on track. Go see this guy at a Baptist church. And I love, and I guess I thought about it more, and I'm like, no, that makes sense, because... This movie as a whole, and we're going to dive, hopefully, deep into this. There were a lot of issues with this film, just, like, filming it, and, like, it went over budget, and John Belushi did a lot of cocaine.
Gee, it went over budget with all those cop cars and car stunts? I can't imagine how that happened. Anyway, continue.
It held a world record at one point.
I'm not surprised.
But one of the issues that came up with the release of this film is only out of, like, I think it was like 1,200 or 1,300 theaters that were operating at the time, only 600 ended up showing this film, because a lot of them were like, no, we're not playing a black movie. Or like John Landis was talking about, he asked, or he was talking to Ted Mann, who was the owner of Mann Theaters. He refused to book the movie except in Compton. Gee, I wonder why. But then when John Landis, the director, asked why, you know, well, what the fuck? Well, why can't you put it in Westwood? Ted Mann said, because I don't want any blacks in Westwood. So that's the kind of one of the many issues this film was dealing with right out of the gate. Like, the it was mostly a black cast, and a lot of people were like, no, we don't want
that. You know, I mean, all the musicians outside of the Blues Brothers were black artists.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Cab Calloway, James Brown, Aretha Franklin, Chaka Khan. You know, they all were. So I 100%... I saw that as well. And, you know, it's... Because the other thing is, like, this movie didn't do well out of the gate. Well, that's why. I mean, that's one of the reasons why.
No. Right. Yeah, it was in less than half of the theaters it should have been.
Obviously, it's now considered, you know, it's considered a top comedy of all time by the BBC, so that's something. But, it's one of those movies that are... A lot of people watch it, and they watch it a lot.
And understand that just because it made the list, it doesn't mean that it's a perfect film, because by no means is it. It suffers from a lot of things, like it's exhausting how long it is, because they had a hard time killing their darlings, and I could tell because of how long some of these shots went, like the extended car chases, and I get it, because you purchase all these vehicles to be used, and you get all this footage that is just, there's so much, and it's so convoluted, but it's entertaining, and you just want to put all of it in there. And although they had way more footage than even made it into the film, they still could have cut so much from it. But I could see, and I think this is what gets it onto the list as well, is how much fun everyone had on that film. Because you go through this entire thing, you can see everyone getting along with each other and having fun. And then even at the end of the scene, after the Jailhouse Rock, your final scene in the jail, you go to the credits, and you have them individually crediting the actors that were in the film, because they wanted to make sure everyone in that film was shown that they were appreciated, even down to a shot where it credits the crew. And when I saw that, that made me so happy, because this past year I've been working on Lifetime Films with the same production company, and so it's all of us, we're all a film family, because I've gotten to know every department: the electrical department, the grips, the hair and makeup, stunts, directors, right, just every down to the DIT. And it's great to see this film and have it appreciate everyone that worked on it. And I wish we could see more of that in film, because it's nice being just someone who comes from that background.
Just to kind of piggyback on that, Chad, did you have something?
Well, I was going to go back to them going to the Baptist church.
We'll come back to the media. I just want to mention something that I noticed watching it that I hadn't noticed before, to kind of piggyback on the appreciation. What was that?
That was a very large vehicle, loud vehicle driving by my bedroom window. Studio One window. Sorry.
I thought that was Candace's stomach, because she wasn't eating enough.
Too much Red Bull and Jack.
The scene where the Cab Calloway song, Minnie the Moocher, when you look at the band playing with Cab Calloway, the genuine smiles on their face as they are having so much fun doing that, playing with a legend that is Cab Calloway, doing one of his classic songs, doing the big band thing. I mean, it just to your point, you can tell that they're having fun. They're enjoying it. They love being on that set. and doing that. I mean, I don't know. I would imagine that for many musicians, you know, if you're playing in a trombone and a horn section and all that, being in a big swing band or with a Cab Calloway, that's like the dream, right? That's the top. And they're able to do that. So that's yeah. So let
even down to the background actors being able to sit in the same theater with that performer and to be able to interact with them, and that's historical. That's momentous. That's something that you're gonna tell your family every year at your gatherings, just because it's such an impactful experience. And that's what I appreciate about this film too, is it created so many of those moments for the people involved.
Yeah.
And it makes me happy to know that.
So let's go back to the James Brown Chaka Khan in the church. So James Brown is the minister. Chaka Khan is the choir soloist.
Mm-hmm. Well, and where I was going with that earlier with, you know, the fact that this film had so many problems with certain people and releasing it because it had a black cast, I love the fact that Cab Calloway's character tells them to go from, like, the whitest white Christian diocese and go to this Baptist, like, you know, joyful, like, the whole beginning when they're going to see the penguin, like, it's very Roman Catholic, it's, you know, dark and wood and the crucifix of Jesus looking down, staring at him, and she even has a presence of mystical powers.
Floats back into her room.
Looking up the stairs, very, like, exorcist-like. You know, very much that feel.
Yeah.
Yes,
well,
yes.
Well, also, that I think, was John Landis showing off some of his horror skills, because he's filmed
Thriller was one of his biggest, like, I mean, it's horror, but it's the music video Thriller. He did.
American Werewolf in London?
Yes, that's what it was, in London. Yes. Incorporating a lot of style into that scene. It was great.
Oh, yeah, totally. But the fact that they go from that to a Baptist church with colors and excitement and, you know, a clergy that just, you know, wants to get you on your feet. Like, I gymnastics down the aisle and... It's such a good another way of, like, waking.
Yes.
There's a lot of juxtaposition in this movie and with what's going on today. Currently
yeah,
today.
Yeah, there's and some just, current just, events right after that scene.
Yeah. I
oh yeah, totally.
This, yeah,
Nazi
this,
rally.
Like, wow, this holds up. This holds up for many reasons, sadly.
Very topical.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
I didn't realize that was a real thing. I had looked that up. The Skokie affair.
The writers a lot of credit for that. I mean, because that had just happened in like 1978. Just to give background, and Chad, jump in, correct me, but in 1978. Illinois Nazis, actual Nazis, petitioned the city of Skokie, Illinois, to do a march. Skokie, Illinois, is has a high concentration of Jewish immigrants and a lot of people who have survived World War II concentration camps and Holocaust.
The Holocaust.
But it was upsetting and just so uncomfortable to watch that scene, just in general. But more so because of what we still have going on right now, what we've all been going through. And I'm going to say it. It's topical because of all the Black Lives Matter protests that have been going on this past, in the last 2 weeks. And it's insane because you hear their rhetoric and they refer to themselves. It's the American Socialist White People's Party was what they had in the film.
Yeah.
And they talk about themselves. And this is, quote, as peaceful, law-abiding white folk. And they're trying to appeal to their fellow white folk to try to get them to support their movement and their beliefs. And it's so upsetting because they sound so calm. And it's too realistic because individuals who present themselves in that manner can seem very logical. But if you actually listen to them and go beyond their tone and what they're saying, like how they're saying the things. It's what they're saying that is that's upsetting.
I was happy for once, at least in the past couple weeks, where police officers were protecting protesters against the Nazis and like holding them back. They weren't wearing riot gear. Nobody had guns.
There's a lot more hate towards the Nazis,
which is weird to think.
Another instance too of where God's hand played, where Elwood was just like, oh, I had enough of this, and he pulls off the road and he starts driving. He drives into the crowd, and the police protect everybody except the Nazis, and the Nazis fall into the river. And I'm like, man, fuck, if this is real life, like 15 people would have just died.
I don't know if you saw, and I'm blanking on, but that happened with a big rig.
That was in Minneapolis. Just last
week, about a week ago, where there were protesters on a bridge.
Yep.
And full, like 35 plus miles an hour, maybe up to 50, this big rig comes charging into the crowd. Luckily, I haven't followed up with the story since it happened, but luckily no one was killed that I know of. But they all band together and they pulled that driver out. But just to see a vehicle driving into a crowd of people is, it's, I can't believe.
NYPD.
It's so current event. Yeah. It's so relevant.
NYPD officer did the same thing, not this past week, but the weekend before, with protesters just driving their squad into a crowd.
So let's bring it back to the Blues Brothers now.
Yeah, pivot.
Oh, come on, it's Chris.
It's topical.
I just feel we could continue talking about this, and you would melt, Chad. Literally in your room. So we gotta get talking. Let's talk more about some of the other musicians that were in this film. You had John Lee Hooker doing some street music, singing Boom Boom Boom.
Boom 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 Boom. I love Donald Duck Dunn as the bass player. He's always my favorite.
Well, these guys are Saturday Night Live players. John Lee Hooker, blues player, blues guitarist, blues singer. We'll get to the SNL players in a little bit, Chad. Come on. Did you see the agenda? Clearly.
Yeah, didn't you get the very organized list of how this evening was going to go?
I don't know what's going on.
No, I didn't. That's true. It doesn't exist.
Sorry. I set up the Zoom call.
So you also had... Ray Charles played Ray, the music man. What did you think about Ray Charles in this film? One of my favorite songs, by the way. They're all great songs. Go ahead.
I thought of all the musicians that had to act in this. Yeah. He's one of the stronger performances.
It was so endearing too, and so.
Yeah.
Unsettling when he pulls that gun on that little child trying to steal that guitar off that wall. Yeah. But, you know, I get it. He's sad that such a young soul is turning out so bad. But that's the way life is sometimes. And he's just taking it in stride. And I appreciate and respect that.
That whole scene, though, like, I always like the setup where it's like, you know, hey, we used to buy stuff from you. Great. I don't care. Hey, what about this keyboard? It's a piece of shit. Oh, no, it's still got some action in it. And he sits down and it's the first time the whole band's together, too. So it's it's a special song because it sets the band up.
Yeah, you get a feel for them, and you kind of see that the Blues Brothers take a back seat to Ray, and let him run that song. And yeah, I agree.
And the enjoyment was—you watch Ray Charles on camera, and they cater the scene to him because, for those who don't know, Ray Charles has a little bit of a sight impairment, if you will.
A little bit.
But they allow him to have that moment with the kid, and still being with it and on it, and in tune with things. And then to have that other musician come in and be like, I don't know about this keyboard. It doesn't seem like it's up to scale. And then for Ray to be like, oh, you know, I think this thing's doing fine. Just sit down and just bust out working out. Oh, that was so satisfying to watch.
Yeah, so the other actor, Cab Calloway, a little personal history. Like, so my grandfather in the 1930s played in a big band. He played the accordion and was the band leader, and he actually got to play and got to know Cab Calloway.
Wow.
I wouldn't say at a, you know, great level, but where Cab Calloway knew my grandpa. So yeah,
that's an opportunity still.
Pretty cool. to say, you know, so I started this podcast just so I could share that fact. So now here we are.
Wow, and here we are. And now we're done. Thanks, everyone. This has been great.
Your life is now complete.
If you didn't know, this was the payoff for the journey. Have a nice life.
Now move on with my life. All right.
Cab Calloway.
Yeah, so they tried to get Little Richard as well to play in this film. But Little Richard at the time was only doing gospel music, and this was like when he was a pastor. So he didn't want to be in the movie.
Yeah.
So they tried to get all the legendary black musicians that they could in it, obviously. And highlight the music, which is so good. I don't know. Then you got a lot of other actors in here. We talked John Candy has a bit part where he plays like a captain who orders Dole Whips. Or no, not Dole Whips, Orange Whips for everybody. Carrie Fisher, we've talked about. She's got the role as the mystery woman. Frank, scorned lover.
The scorned lover.
Frank Oz. This is the second time that we've seen Frank Oz in a film. Well, you
Kermit
Miss Piggy.
Frog.
Miss Piggy.
And many others.
And Yoda.
And Yoda.
Chad, do you remember the other film that we saw Frank Oz in? You hadn't joined us yet, Candace, when we watched this one, so.
I wasn't part of the crew.
Can you give me a second? Let me at least look at the list.
He needs to look at his notes.
Was he
Christopher.
In the wait.
He was in Trading
was he in
Places.
The Jerk?
That makes more sense. Officer handing out the doing basically the same role. The same role.
The same thing, yeah. Did Steven Spielberg also play the Cook County assessor?
No, but yes. Yes, this is one of the few times that I've ever seen Steven Spielberg play a role in a film. Did you even recognize Steven Spielberg, Candace, when you saw it?
I did because my viewing partner did address it. Personally, I will say, I wish I could have had two viewings for this because I was taking my notes during it and sketching during it. So there are elements of this film I know I did miss out on, but I'm glad to have someone who could call out things like that. So, in short, yes, I saw him.
So just overall strong cast, overall strong mission from God. Yeah. Nobody died.
Most missions from God way back when, you killed a lot of people in a foreign country for your God.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
At least this mission was bloodless.
Well,
in a
mean,
way,
they just didn't
I'm...
involve the blood. But I have a feeling when those Nazis drove off that bridge in Milwaukee,
they might have fallen
to their death. And if not at that point, when the second vehicle fell in their grave hole, that might have done it.
Paul Rubens also has a good role in that. I mean, it's a small role. The waiter. Pee-wee Herman.
The waiter, yeah.
Oh, I know what he showed up, Pee-wee. And I actually kind of, just a little bit, hate Pee-wee because of... that thing. Yeah, that. That's the only reason. I might enjoy having a conversation with him, but you know.
If you ever want a trip, go back and watch Pee Wee's Playhouse.
But I mean, I did. Especially when I was younger, I've seen it.
Oh, that's you did.
Kind of why I'm not a fan, and you know, I know a little bit about him. And theaters.
So he jerked off in
and
the
got
theater.
Caught. Like you get caught. I'm sorry.
He didn't sexually harass anybody. He didn't kill anybody.
I have plenty of friends. I mean, I don't know who you are, but if it happens, cool. But if you get caught, you can get crap for that.
Forever.
Forever. Oh, yeah. Yeah, everyone. They're just staring at you, doing the whole thing. You like your movies too, huh? Why don't you get a little popcorn at the stand instead of spending your time doing things you shouldn't be doing in front of kids? Hmm?
Maybe I shouldn't have been jerking off in Jerry Maguire, but I had to.
Oh, yeah? Because Tom?
Well, he was trying to show him the money. Shot.
Anyway, Blues Bros.
I've never jerked off in a theater, by the way.
I love that this conversation led down the path of jerking off in theaters. Thank you, Blues Brothers.
Listen,
I
brought it up.
Because Pee Wee Herman did that.
Yeah, so let's bring it back. It's my fault. I shouldn't have mentioned him being in here. I should have passed
it's
that
true.
Up.
You should have known.
So the original Saturday Night Live band is in this film as well. So, you know, and they basically, they're not even given names different from their own names. You know, Tom Malone, Willie Hall, Steve Cropper, Murphy Dunn. You got Duck, your man Duck there. Yep.
Donald Duck Dunn. Yeah.
So yeah, they all have the same names, which I thought was funny. Matt Malone, Lou Marini played the sax. Matt Murphy.
I feel like that maintaining their names brings that element of friends coming together to make a film, as opposed to just like casting people and having them play characters. Yes, they're characters, but they're. It's still, you're getting together with your pals, and you're doing this thing that everyone's impassioned about. And I think for those of us who do have a love for film and understand that camaraderie that you get when you make one, it's just a little something extra for us that I really do appreciate they incorporate.
All right, so I have a couple trivia questions for you, too. Let's see how you can do. Mm-hmm. How many cars were wrecked on this film?
286. I'm just throwing that out there. I don't know. I didn't look.
I'm gonna say
103.
Oh! Ah! Take that,
in the main.
I went because I was closer.
In the main chase, there were 60 police cars that were purchased for about $400 a piece.
They only got 60.
Oh, that's not bad.
400. Good on that producer.
There were 11 different Bluesmobile cars. Like their cop car, the magic car.
Oh, and we totally didn't address the fact that they blew up all those that mall because they had a city for their set that was going to be demolished.
Yeah, the mall was a closed mall. So, yep. So
yeah, that's
it.
What
closed,
it was.
Like, yeah, it was just the year mall. Before or whatever. And it was it. But it, and, it, and that, gonna... that mall
luckily it
was
not so roomy
until 2013.
Really?
It was
so
never
they left
reopened.
It up after
yeah, it was just
Blues Brothers.
Yep.
Wreaked havoc.
And so.
Oh my gosh! So you could go there and take photos during that time between filming and
apparently, I'm sure you can find it out there. They had to purchase everything to supply those stores, so they look like actual stores. And
Pure One Imports, baby clothes.
Everything that's clothes.
Oh, this mall's got everything.
J.C. Penney, Toys R Us,
Oldsmobile
Pier
came out
One.
That year.
Howard Johnson Hotels,
Hotels.
But, they then had to try to return everything that wasn't damaged after they had bought it.
I know that life. Poor art department. Oh.
Okay. Here's another trivia question. Which actor in this
did the most cocaine? John Belushi. I win.
Die Hard. I'll give you a hint. It's nobody the character in this film did not have a name.
It didn't have a name.
It wasn't Twiggy.
Was it Twiggy? No. I mean, she was the chic. She was the chic lady.
It wasn't Twiggy.
I don't think you're gonna get it.
Steve Bloom.
I don't think you're gonna get it.
Shit.
No, wasn't Paul Reubens.
It's Paul Reubens.
Was the young guitar thief. Yep.
Oh, it was the kid?
Really? He's Argyle.
Is he the hacker?
He's Argyle.
Oh, he's Argyle. Oh fuck yeah.
He's Argyle. That's so cool. He learned his lesson being shot at, trying to steal the guitar, and like, I want to go into acting. And he became a limo driver.
That's wonderful. Ray Charles saved his life by shooting at
him. Yeah, Ray Charles really shot at him, and it got him to turn his life
that's
around.
Still not... No, no.
Great.
Guns are not okay. When you're doing that, don't do that.
No.
Don't do that.
Don't shoot at kids.
Don't shoot at people in general, no. Well,
I mean, don't shoot at people Nazis. In general.
Ray Charles, I know, I get it. I get it, you defend, but still, come on. Come on.
It was a nice Fender Strat. Uh-huh. I get it. But it wasn't worth... Think of all the paperwork.
I mean...
And, like, getting the cops over there.
You're blind. If you would have said, hey, kid, he would have been freaked out that you even saw him.
Probably.
That's all you needed to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's another one. Which two actors became engaged during filming?
Ooh, oh, yeah. I know this one. But I'll let Candace guess first.
Was it Aretha Franklin and Frank Oz? I'm dream casting here. I want
to
see them get it up.
Trying to ship them up.
And then he
Yeah, Frank Oz and Aretha.
And then Frank Oz took her name.
Oh, yeah.
So he was Frank Franklin?
Totally. Frank Franklin, 2021. Wait.
It was actually Dan Aykroyd and Carrie Fisher.
They never got married.
Yes.
They were engaged, and they were set up by John Belushi.
But they were engaged.
Of all people.
Well, he clearly didn't want her.
Yeah.
He left her at the altar.
Yeah, yeah.
With the brother then, I guess. So,
he knows how to make toast.
This was kind of been said already, but there was money in the budget for cocaine. It was 1980.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And
well, it was the
80s for John Belushi. He at one point disappeared off the set.
Wow.
They found out. That he just went to some stranger's house and said, hey, man, do you mind if I sleep on your couch and get a sandwich? Because when the director came to fetch him and was just knocking on doors looking for him, he just knocked on a door and the guy, oh, are you here for this guy? Yeah, he's right here.
Are you looking for John Belushi?
Hey, John, finish your sandwich. I think you got a movie you're working on. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're welcome. That was my reenactment of
that
scene.
So, yeah. So
they built a bar where cast and crew would hang out at, the Blues Bar, and then apparently a lot of people would get drugs there too. So
drug dead.
Yeah.
There was a reason why this film went over budget.
Yeah.
Besides all the car chases.
Got it. And all of the stars.
Oh.
So many.
This film, if you want another trivia question, this film actually started the Illinois Film Board, or whatever they call themselves. Because this movie was primarily shot in Chicago, and at the time, Chicago really wasn't a film city like it is now. But because they spent so much money in the city and, you know, damaging so much shit with their car chases, It started the Illinois State Film Board.
But yeah, I mean, the local residents were getting so scared of seeing this because they're not necessarily aware of the filming going on because there wasn't anything set up to kind of quarter things off or tell people what's going on. So yeah, that caused some problems.
I was quite impressed to see how many streets they had cleared when they were doing those car chases.
Yeah.
That they weren't completely cleared, but to be able to drive through the city, through that much of the city, or what I perceived as quite a bit of the city.
Well, yeah, you know it's Chicago, right? They're driving past the iconic buildings and
that film shows it off.
Yeah, Chicago is almost a character of itself. All right, so the question is, does this inspire anyone to go see Blues Brothers 2000? The follow-up with Dan Aykroyd playing Elwood Blues again.
And then a reanimated John Belushi. Really?
Yeah, they bring back John Goodman to become the lead singer. They bring back a lot of the original band. I think everyone that was still alive for the Blues Brothers band, the SNL band, they joined, including Paul Schaefer this time. I've never seen the film, to be honest, because I love this film so much. And honestly, that this era is the best era of Dan Aykroyd. You have this film, you have Spies Like Us, you have Ghostbusters. The worst era of Dan Aykroyd is around like the mid-90s through like the 2005 or so, in my opinion. I could be wrong, but...
So you're lumping Blues
that's
Brothers
the
2000.
Bad,
given that it was, it came out in 98.
Of...
But it was 2 hours and 4 minutes. They managed
and
to
they
tighten it up a little.
And they ruined 104 cars in that one. Yeah, one more.
Oh, did they?
Just to one-up them.
Okay, so I'm gathering, not a good film. I'm curious, for someone who loves Blues Brothers, is there any element, and Chad, this question's going to you because you have more of a love for it that I've picked up on. Is there... any element of watching that film that does bring enjoyment and satisfaction to someone who loves the cast and loves the characters and just loves what Blues
you
Brothers is?
Blues Brothers 2000?
Yeah. Was it that bad?
I have not seen it. I saw the preview way back in 2000, and I'm like, no, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good. Like, even back then, I was a stupid, 16-year-old, and I knew it was a cash grab. One of those films that didn't need a sequel. Nobody was asking for a sequel 20 years later.
Yeah, looking at the poster for Blues Brothers 2000, it does look like a poorly made Men in Black ripoff.
That's one of the problems, right? Like, if someone dresses up like the Blues Brothers, the question, Blues Brothers or Men in Black? I'm not sure. Wasn't there another Blues Brothers movie out that had Jim Belushi in it? Am I remembering that wrong?
Did it?
I don't know. Maybe. Or no, didn't Jim fill in for any time, you know, Dan Aykroyd would bring those characters back?
I'm sure he did.
Like, didn't Jim fill in for his brother? Yeah. I don't know if it...
Again, the lesser of the Belushi brothers. You know, it's like being... any Baldwin not named Alec. You know, just... you're good, but... are you that good? No.
Eric Baldwin.
Yeah, I mean, this is... the original Blues Brothers is right there, right in the early 80s, early to late 80s. That's really the good Aykroyd. And I don't know, Chad, I think we've had this talk before when we talked about Ghostbusters way back in number 94 or whatever. What are your thoughts on Dan Aykroyd?
Dan Aykroyd, he was great in the mid-70s, probably all the way up to, like, the early 90s. And then, I don't know, man, like, you're only famous and popular for so long. Like, even people we still revere today that were great way back when, they're not topical or they're not...
It takes a lot of energy to maintain an image for the public eye to feed on. Like, just, not that I have any idea, because, no, I'm not famous, but just being around individuals and working in the industry and seeing the different kinds of personalities that you get from individuals who are exposed to that kind of lifestyle, it's exhausting just hearing about it.
Yeah, and, I mean, obviously you want to keep working. You want to do stuff. You think it works. And you know what? Maybe the Blues Brothers 2000 is like, hey, guys, it's been a while. That was so much fun. Why don't we do it again? You know, and try to recreate the fun. Yeah.
That was my curiosity.
You know, John, yeah. I'm thinking that's got to be part of it.
Sorry,
like,
go
you're
ahead.
Right. Nobody was asking for it. The Blues Brothers had a lot of love. It was, you know, this is the time, cable TV is taken over and Blues Brothers was on TV all the time. I could see why he would have interest in doing it and why all the people that joined him would have interest doing it.
I think they would have been better off just re-releasing it in theaters for a 20th anniversary than creating another film, which seems to, the only thing they accomplished with it was crashing one car more than the original. But I would be interested in watching it. I don't think I'm gonna like it.
Would you see a Blues Brothers cover band, or have you seen one?
I've seen a Blues Brothers cover band.
I wouldn't be surprised if you were in one, Chadley.
Everybody needs somebody. I know you normally pose this at the end of the episode, but I was thinking last night when Chris is going to be like, hey, do we remake this today? Yes. And it's with two black brothers. Or they don't have to be black, but just not white. And Dan Aykroyd plays the Cab Calloway character, not necessarily singing Minnie the Moocher, but in the beginning he's the one that sends them on their quest, right? Yeah, that would be his
great.
Character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Passing on.
And then
the
you
torch
do the same thing.
Does he?
Yeah, exactly.
Does he play quite frankly Elwood Blues?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I would say yes. Because even though, like, Jake and Elwood were both degenerates, like, they were young in the movie. When you get older, you at least from what I've experienced watching other people grow older, is you get wiser, you're less of a dumbass, and more of a mentor for the younger generation. So, yeah, I would say it's him as Elwood. I don't necessarily think it would be, like a hard reboot where it's the same storyline of an orphanage needs money, but Elwood would definitely be
the
jumping off point for the two
absolutely.
Main characters.
You could create a really fun dynamic, like, because you know, or for fans, they know the story, like the adventure that Elwood went through. So to kind of mirror that, but give it more of a modern twist, something that's realistic for the characters that you're now passing the torch to. I can see that being a lot of fun, because you keep some of the absurd elements, but you incorporate today.
Go ahead.
And I think there's a lot of potential.
Or, even a little bit more of a twisty twist. Not that blues is not popular. Blues is fucking
absolutely.
Blues, man. Like,
timeless.
If you can't sit and listen to blues, exactly. But to garner the younger crowd, you can call it the Rhythm and Blues Brothers.
Anyway, so...
and then have a lot... Oh, come on! Think of, like, all the R&B artists
that's the question
you get
I was
gonna
ask.
Doing the same thing.
So, like,
you get all these different...
with this film, you know, and the controversy that it had, like, you know, not going into all the theaters that it should have, right? Because it's a majority black cast, majority black music. Is that, like, I see that, I feel that, at least in the music world, there is a lot more acceptance of, you know, the black music and whatnot. Like, Beyonce is the biggest star that there is. You know, and
Queen Bee.
You know, all the hip hop, all the rhythm and blues, all, you know, R&B stars, like, it's now top of culture. You know, 1980, MTV wasn't big yet to give artists more exposure to crowds and audiences that they never could reach, the you know, the pockets of you know, country and suburban white kids and all that, that now has exploded. So do you bring in another you know, do you try to expose something else that is underappreciated or undervalued that could cause that sort of same commotion or same hubbub? You know, do you focus on another musical style? Like you said, rhythm and blues, and I did like that. I was just making it funny. But do you do something else that...
I would. Because I hate when people just remake a movie just to remake it shot for shot, or with the same... When they try to make it too similar to the original, then it's like, well, why don't I just watch the original? Like, why did you call Candace on the set to make us food for a movie we've already seen? Why am I editing a movie that has already been done?
Why are you taking my cooking?
35 years ago.
You call me on set because you enjoy my food. What you doing? Poor analogy, son. No, that's
sorry.
Okay. I get it.
But I definitely would make it. I mean, or the Blues Sisters.
Oh, girl. I don't know. Yes, but no. I get a little tired about with female reboots. If you're going to have, I don't know, because I don't want to call it out. You can get someone genius enough to make something like that work. Surface level, my impression is just create something for a female cast. Don't reskin something with females.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and maybe that just comes with like getting more female artists, because like that's the only thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It was
Aretha
really
Franklin.
Big sausage fest.
I said that
and
at
you
one
point. Chaka Khan is like the two names as far as musician. Well, and Twiggy.
And Twiggy.
There was a scene, like, I want to say at least 2 hours in the film, where I was like, wow, that's a lot of men.
That was the prison scene, Candace. So they do.
Well, yeah. Oh, no, the prison scene, I was thinking, wow, there's not as much color as realistically you would cast for something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I was like,
even
1980 in Cook County.
Whitewashed even there. Cool. But...
Joe Whitewalsh.
Joe Walsh was in
White
there.
Walsh.
Yeah, and
from
the Eagles.
You tried.
Joe Walsh was
I
in there.
All right, so is this a film that you guys would recommend for people?
I wouldn't recommend it to my mom because she wouldn't understand it. Yeah. There's a certain level of comedic intelligence or just language you need to understand. Or you need to understand the culture, rather, because it's very... Saturday Night Live has a specific way of going about things. And if you don't understand that going into this film, you might not enjoy it because of things like political correctness, like sensitivity to people of different walks of life, women, people of color, people of religion, just all these different... You need to have an element of humor that is accepting of certain things because it can... It can rub people the wrong way if you don't get the right one, right person watching it. But other than that, heck yeah, watch this film. It's fun.
I agree. It's definitely one. Like I said earlier, I hadn't seen an unedited for television version, maybe ever, and yeah, it is good. It is. It still holds up. The humor is still funny. The car chases are just ridiculous.
I think what's more ridiculous than the car chase is the end, with the buildup of them getting to the top of, you know, the 11th floor, and it's the police, it's the state police, it's the Coast Guard, it's National Guard, it's the Army, it's FBI agents,
of all that. And so this is being recorded in June of 2020. So we're 2 weeks after, you know, after the protesting has started, and George Floyd and all that. So the police, and the crowds have, you know, there's been issues. They've been at odds.
They've been at odds.
That scene with all the cops and all that, with everything that's going on right now.
Opening fire unconcerned for people in the vicinity. That was a little difficult to watch.
Yeah, when they're on Lower Wacker Drive and all the cops crash into each other. It's like the last time. And they just indiscriminately jump on their cars and start firing. I thought the same thing, Candace. I'm like,
that time. Oh, it's just someone telling a joke.
Somebody's gonna get hurt.
Just completely oblivious to the sensitivity absolutely. Of the time.
Because, I mean, you look at how many other movies with police just, you know, or soldiers just shooting everywhere. It's a joke. It's funny. I mean, Police Academy movies, they're shooting things all the time, and oops, or whatever.
Yeah, within context, sure, but I get it. Like, I understand the joke.
Crap. Yeah.
I definitely think this movie lined up very well.
Then again, maybe we are controlling that because they're.
Yeah.
You know, when we did watch Ghostbusters, we both saw Ghost Chad, so maybe this list is kind of controlling our lives.
Oh, did you?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. You boys getting haunted?
I mean,
got ghosts up there in Wisconsin. I
mean, yeah, but they're
very kind,
Midwestern nice about it.
So they walk in the bathroom and like, oh, sorry.
yeah, like they don't want to leave, but they're definitely apologetic. That's nice. About it.
I'm sorry, I'm still here. Yeah. I know this is a very odd situation, and just I don't know why I'm talking like I'm from the South, but you know. Sometimes you get some of those transplant ghosts where they come from the South, and you get them stuck in your house, and there's just nothing you can do about it. And they're like, "Okay."
It's not a Southern thing. No. Like you can get some of those accents in rural. Yeah. I never say that word.
Rural
areas.
All right. So of our the state. Next film. Are we good to move on? Any final thoughts on the Blues Brothers?
Absolutely, young man. You can go ahead and move on to that.
Our next film is one I am guessing that none of us have seen. It's called My Man Godfrey. It's from...
Let's see.
It's from 19...
Oh, you haven't seen MMG? Come on, man.
...by Gregory LaCava. One of the stars, and the only star that I recognize by name, is Carol Lombard. And I don't know why. But just looking at her, she died at the age of 33. So she was a very, very busy actress for many years, but passed away early. So Candace, if you would to do any background work on Carol Lombard, if you have time now that you're working, that would be fantastic.
Hey.
Carol Lombard.
Good news. Good news, everybody.
It's also on Amazon Prime.
It's on YouTube
for free.
Thank goodness for those 1936 films. Screwball comedy.
Yeah. Everybody involved is dead, so nobody can make any more money.
Their families can.
I think we're going to be hitting a couple films here that are from the 1930s. We have a Buster Keaton film coming up soon. So we got some good films that none of us have seen before coming up.
I like that. I like when
especially when they're
watch
named
films
after flowers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was one film.
Shut up.
Like Candace, that was called Daisies. So, Anyway, any final thoughts, Chad, that you'd like to share?
Thank you for not making me tell the whole story of the movie.
We were going along. We had a good conversation going, so I didn't want to stop that. So if we can...
Yeah. A lot to talk about. And you know what happens when you watch a film that's over 2 hours?
That's how... If you keep it going like that, then, you can help avoid that. Yeah.
Wow, we're almost at 50.
Yep. Wow. I'm watching that. I'm watching that. Candace, any final thoughts from you?
I think I do.
Hate Illinois Nazis.
I do. I hate them so much. But it was satisfying to see them drive off a bridge. So there's that, everyone.
Stay safe. Don't drive off bridges unless you're an Illinois Nazi.
Yes. Pay attention to the signs. Maybe don't drive through them.
I love in that shot, only because I know both Chicago and Milwaukee way more better, but when they drive off that part of the cliff, that part of the freeway was probably only like 100 feet in the air. And then they cut to the car barely end over end in front of the Sears Tower, like 1,200 feet in the air. I'm like, I don't believe the physics in that, but I'm going to allow it because they're Nazis.
Yeah. So thank you, BBC, for adding this to your list. And remember, Lord loves a working man.
The Filmological Society is a production of Redacted Media in association with Ghost Hand Media. For more information, find us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, or visit us at www.ghosthand.net.